So, you know, on this NFNLP forum, we'll start with a question. Sorry about the delay. And the question is, and I get it a lot, like I said, when people are taking an NLP, thinking of taking an NLP or something, especially if they've had hypnosis training. I get a lot from people who had a hypnosis training. And that is, when do you know when to use NLP and when do you know when to do hypnosis? Well, it's a good question. So the person that sent it, thank you. It's a very good question. But it has a fallacy built into it. Number one is, and because we get this more from the hypnosis and the therapeutic community, people trained in like cognitive behavioral or things like that, because that group always talks about adding tools to a toolbox. So you might do a regression. You might do a visualization. You might do different tools that you can use. And so they'll go, we're going to add a new tool to the toolbox. Great. And even EFT would fit to me as a tool, right? And so then when they, especially if they're training that first, and then they look at NLP as a tool to go in the toolbox. And while I will admit, that NLP has a boatload of techniques, right, that you can use for all sorts of things. If I had three really good NLP people in the room, like there's Monica, there's Tim on the line. If we had other people doing that, right, or Miss Carolyn just jumped on the video for the webinar. If I had us all and we were talking about, and I presented a client's presenting with this, and whatever it is, there's smoker and da-da-da-da-da, we all might have a totally different approach. We would do a different technique, a different tool. And they all might work, right? That's a tool. You know, like you get three just people not trained in NLP, but in hypnosis, and you know, you present a problem, someone has a problem, you give the overview, you might get three different answers. Of course, if they're a regression person, they're going to say regression. If they're this, they're going to say that. If they like scripts, they're going to say a script, whatever it is. And all of these things work. I'm not saying they don't work. And these are tools. Maybe they'll do EFT, whatever it happens to be. Great stuff, right? But if you look at NLP as a tool, you've missed a great opportunity. Because anybody who's been through my trainings, you always hear me say at the beginning of it, NLP is not a tool. It is a toolbox. When you understand the whole process, now there's a lot of tools within it, the visual squash, the new behavior generator, the fast phobia technique, the six-step reframe, the swish pattern, the magic mirror. I mean, just literally dozens, if not hundreds, of techniques. Those are tools. But the NLP itself is a toolbox. It's a structure of how you gather information, how you think about the problem, how you approach it. And then what you do after you've gathered that information, and this is where people, maybe they read an NLP book or they pick up a journal article or something and there's a really cool technique and they add it. So that adds to the misnomer that NLP is a tool to go into your toolbox. No, if you really learn it, it becomes the template that all your other tools fit in. I have this conflict with some people that don't understand that, especially if they're very, very regimented on what they think works, right? Like only regression or only this or only that. Well, then they don't get that you can learn and master NLP, maybe never do an NLP technique per se, and do your regression. And if you learn the NLP, I would dare say it would probably make you twice as effective as someone without it, because you're going to know how to gather the right information. You're going to do the right kind of mirror matching. You're going to do that. In fact, you know, Jerry Kine, when I first met him back in the early 90s, he was not a fan of NLP, right? And then as we got to know each other and he saw me work, I taught NLP at, you know, the Omni Hypnosis Training Center. And it changed how he taught his regression. If you went back and got his really old videos, which I have some, and then you watch some of the later ones that he did, he added how to gather information, how to do the mirroring and matching. He added it to it, right? And let's be honest, a lot of people may not want to add NLP to their school or to their teaching, and that's purely a protect your market share approach. You know, it's like, no, we only do this, whatever it happens to be. So NLP, is not a tool, it becomes the toolbox. How do you gather information? How do you look at your clients? How do you structure what you're going to do? And then once you have that, that's the beginning of it. That's the info gathering. That's the mirroring and matching. That's understanding what's going on, right? And now we've added in the NFNLP, the only group, National Federation of Neuro-Linguistic Programming, we have the new theory of NLP and hypnosis with the HOT model, the hierarchy of thought model, which gives you a template of how your work, how hypnosis actually works, whether you're doing a regression, whether you're doing anything else, right? And I'll talk about the HOT model next, but it gives you a different way of looking at it. So whatever tool you decide to use, it just adds to it. And people then also miss the boat that even if you're like doing a regression or a progression or whatever you're gonna do, once someone's in trance, then the NLP techniques, if you're gonna use those little techniques, become twice as powerful, if not more so, right? The power grows exponentially when you're in deep trance. So if you you do the NLP technique while they're in, let's say, light trance, it makes it much more effective. Some of the NLP techniques work really, really good in deep trance. But a lot of us, what we'll do is we'll do the NLP technique before we formally put the person in trance. And then, and then reinforce it again while they're in trance. And do and I'm not saying add just like do a suggestion script or a pattern script. I'm saying you actually like do let's say like the new behavior generator while they're not in formal trance yet, and then after you do it, then you put them in trance and you do it again because now you've accessed the subconscious mind, which is linking the hemispheres, the brain in a different way, and it's going to become much more effective that way, right? So it's a good question, the person that sent it in, which is, you know, NLP, when do you use NLP and when do you use hypnosis? They're interchangeable to me. And once you learn NLP the right way, like from an NFNLP trainer or someone that's competent at true NLP training, you're always using it anyway, the mirroring, the matching, the language patterns. If you learn the master and you're constantly doing waking hypnosis or covert trance, when you're doing all this stuff, boom, it makes hypnosis much more effective. You know, when I teach the way I do hypnosis, I call it neuro-linguistic hypnosis. It's needed for the student, for the people taking it, to have preferably basic and master NLP before we do the formal trance training, right? If you do that first, the trance training is very fast. It's not that hard to teach someone how to go into trance, right? Kind of give a brief overview. You talk about trance because, as we all know, getting someone in trance is easy if you know what you're doing. What you do with them when they're in trance becomes the interesting part, right? And so that's where I do at least the basic. They have to have the basic NLP because then you've already learned the mirroring and the matching. You know which representational system your client is using, visual, auditory, kinesthetic. So if you're going to do a trance on someone that's visual, you use visual words as you're putting in trance or auditory, kinesthetic, whatever it happens to be. I remember, not to date myself, that this was never taught in hypnosis training. Now it's pretty common in a lot of the hypnosis trainings, right? That you figure out what's your target, the person you're doing the trance with. What is their representational system? And then you bend whatever you're going to do. If you're going to do a progressive, you can do it visually, auditory, kinesthetically. So anyway, it just adds to that. So that's some of the reasons why you want to use NLP all the time. And then hypnosis becomes one of the tools you can use, right? Because there's a lot of people, and I've done it, whole sessions, and never do formal trance, right? Never do formal trance. Do all the change work when they're just sitting in the chair and we're talking, and maybe do an NLP technique. I just did it with someone with the magic mirror and this and this and that. Then we're done. They go, oh, what about the trance? Oh yeah, okay, fine, sit down. Then I did a rapid induction on them, reinforced everything that we just talked about and sent them on their way. So that was a good question. The other question, how do you know someone's a competent NLP trainer? That's a great question. That's a very good question. And of course, I have a training organization, and I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, always look for the NFNLP logo. But I would be remiss if I didn't get totally honest and say, really what you need to do if you're thinking of taking an NLP training, this would be true with any kind of training, hypnosis, NLP, whatever it is that you're looking at. First of all, find out, does the person really do it, right? One of my pet peeves is in hypnosis and NLP is the people quit doing it. And what I mean by doing it, yeah, they'll do an NLP technique while they're doing a seminar, because you're constantly, you might be demoing them, or hypnosis while you're doing a seminar. But do you do it every day? And what I mean by that is, you know, would you willingly and easily take someone that says, hey, my friend wants to stop smoking, would you see him? And you talk to him and they go, sure. Would you just take somebody off the street? And the reason I think that's important is I think that keeps the trainer's ego in check, right? Because when I'm in a class, whether it's 15 or 20, like I just had up at the National Guild of Hypnotists, or when I was doing a couple of trainings at HypnoThoughts, you know, you got, I don't know, one room had about 75 or 80 people and the other room had about 40. Well, when I go to do a technique, I call it the power of the platform. You know, the people are like, ooh, they're watching you. They know of you. They might've read your books or seen a video. And so like, they're more primed for change. So that's, you know, that's cool. I heard Orman McGill talk about this. And of course it actually goes back to Milton Erickson. But what about a person that doesn't know who you are, doesn't care who you are, or that you've written books or won awards or been at conferences or whatever. They just want to stop smoking, lose weight, improve their game, whatever it is that they're working on. Would you be willing to sit down with that person and put the pedal to the metal, test your skill set in the real world, right? And that, I think, is very important. So if I'm looking for a trainer, I'm like, do you do this, right? When I started doing some internet marketing stuff, I was talking to somebody. My first question was, what was the last website that you built that was successful? You know? Personally, right? And I talked to a couple of people and they're like, they start talking about, they haven't really done it in a long time, right? And this is true of like, if someone's going to help you with marketing, you know, are they willing to test their work, right? And again, the way you test it, especially in our world, NLP, hypnosis, or therapy, is someone that doesn't know who you are from Adam, right? They're not going to be impressed because you're, you know, in a room with 200 people and they finally get called upon to come down front, and so you're going to do a technique. Well, I would say they're already primed for a change because they're in the room. So what about these people that don't know who you are? Are you willing to have some fun with this? I don't know if he's still on the Facebook Live over there, but Bill Holman, the guy that I would say is my one of the most influential people in my life when it comes to martial arts. I got to go to a George Dillman seminar. It was a long time ago now. And as a black belt, he asked me, he gets a hold of me like 2 days before and goes, George Dillman did, you're going to teach something Friday night. I'm like, what the hell am I going to teach all these guys in the room are, most of them are masters and they're martial arts for their whole life and this and that. And I said that. I said, what can I teach these guys? Most of them, they run dojos. They teach other seminars. You know, I do it. I love martial arts, especially back then. I was really active. I love the pressure points. What can I teach that, you know, these guys, this is what a lot of them do for a living. Mr. Dillman and Bill Holman said the same thing, which was, well, you do this NLP and hypnosis, right? I said, yeah. I said, well, do something about that. Talk about the mind, right? Because you're always, I remember I impressed me with Master Dillman when he said, yeah, you know, yeah, we're always, you know, people don't train the mind enough. They only train the body. I'm like, okay, good point. So I had to do my Friday night thing. Now these people didn't know who I was, right? I mean, they're martial artists, right? I'm a second Dan at the time, second degree black belt. And I'm like, okay, so I talked about fear, how fear actually works in the brain. I talked about what I know, right? And how it applies to us in the martial arts, whether you're fighting, whether you're doing this, and how, you know, you train in the martial arts to control that adrenaline dump so you don't go into fight or flight, you just go into hyper state where you're ready to fight, right? Or use your skill set, so you're very calm. And here's a way to do it. And I think I did the circle of excellence, right? And I did a few other things. That's all I did, right? And I'm like, because, you know, but I was willing to test it. And this was a group of people that weren't into our world of NLP or hypnosis, right? And I wasn't trying to sell them a seminar. I wasn't trying to sell books or videos or anything. By the way, I did sell, people did order some books and some videos after that. But it was kind of fun, right? So I was willing to test my work. So are you willing to test your work? You know, and I know, again, in that martial arts world, a pressure point, they'll always say, hey, you don't believe in it? Come here, come here. You know, that's how I got hooked in the pressure points. It's that, it's this mindset I brought into my NLP, because the first seminar I went to, you know, I'm like, I heard all this about pressure points. You could hit somebody in a couple places and you go out. I'm like, yeah, right, right. Because I was coming from a school of harder, faster, stronger. And so I remember being at the seminar and somewhere in the Chicagoland area, that's where I met, you know, Master Holman and a few, and his son, Brett, one of the best fighters I've ever seen, and a few other people. And I'm standing there, and he and the teacher goes, who here doesn't really believe this works? And I kind of, I have my doubts. He goes, well, come here, right? And he goes, okay, if I touch you in three places, maybe four, no harder than this, like that, you know, not going to super punch you, just, you know, do you believe I could knock you out? And, of course, I'm like, I don't know. I was out like a light, right? You know, and he hit me in the gallbladder 20. I forget which this one is. Right. So it was like a doom, doom. Well, first he did an arm, liver, I think, boom. And then it was three places that quick. Right. I was out like a light. Well, guess what? Then I was hooked. Why? It worked. I saw it work on me, and he was willing to test it. I was a skeptic. So I knew there was no, like, I wasn't mesmerized by Master Dillman or this group. You know, yeah, I'd seen him in Black Belt magazine. I, you know, this was, the internet was new, so we didn't have that. But it's like, whatever, you know, and then it was, he proved his work to me, and then it worked. So that's how I would say, how do you know you're getting a good trainer? Find out they do it in the real world. Do they still see clients that aren't just referrals? Now that sounds kind of hypocritical coming from me, because almost all my clients right now are referrals, but I'm getting a few that are coming in from, especially in the addiction world, that, you know, and they still have a little bit of power of the platform because they've read my book or they've watched a video or something like that. So, but are they willing to test their work, right? So, you know, do they still see real life clients? Are they willing to see real life clients? What was the last breakthrough that they had, you know? You know, when I start studying that, that's an important question to me, whatever it is that I'm studying, you know, the people that are teaching me. Are they still learning? Are they still growing? Are they still doing things? You know, because I heard someone say once, and this has to do with the martial arts, but this is very applicable for hypnosis and NLP, which was, one of the jokes was, a lot of guys say they take martial arts for 20 years, which is a lie. They've actually taken 1 year of martial arts 20 times because they don't really learn anything new after they get to their, like, Shodan level or just the katas. They don't keep learning, growing, and changing. And so I think that's true of NLP and hypnosis. Someone might say, I've been in it for 25 years. Nah, actually, they're in for 1 year, 25 times. They haven't really learned anything new. Nope, I still do this. I do the intake, and then I do a regression, and then I do a pattern script, and then I do this. Or I do an intake, and then I do what, you know, like some kind of script thing, you know, a reinforcement script, and then that's it, right? So they haven't learned, they haven't grown, they haven't changed, whatever it is. So, and this is true for us. So if you want to find a good trainer, of course, hopefully they're from a good organization, the National Federation of Neurolinguistic Programming, I would say is one of the best, because we teach street smart NLP, not a lot of theory. You know, I always tell my trainers, people aren't really there just to hear you talk, you know, and I think of trainings I've been to where people are talking about all kinds of stuff has nothing to do with learning NLP or whatever the skill set I'm there to learn. They're waxing eloquently on their vision of life and all this other stuff. So I'd say that NFNLP is a good one. The Society of NLP is generally very good. Of course, that's Richard Bandler's group. That's the one I originally studied with, Bandler and Grinder. And, you know, I'm taking seminars with him and the late John Grinder. And I would say David Gordon, someone, a name a lot of people don't remember, was very influential when I was learning. Of course, late Steve Andreas, Connie Ray Andreas, her sister, Tamara. I mean, the list goes on. Several people now are no longer, like I said, are no longer with us. Epstein and some of the others that I trained with. But they were always learning new things and changing and growing. So that would be my thing. So when you look for a teacher, ask what they're learning and maybe what are they doing outside of this, right? What's their other passions besides hypnosis or NLP? Because passion is encompassing. Hey, Beryl, when you have a passion, you know, I love NLP. I love hypnosis, right? I love martial arts. The love's coming back. I was in love with it, and then I just kind of liked it. Now I'm back into loving it, right? Theater, acting, those are my big things, right? I used scuba dive. What else do they do? You know, I always think of Richard Bandler, right? The brilliant Richard Bandler. He's a musician, loves learning music, playing music, doing this. You know, one of my dear friends, Jeff Neal, master MMA coach, was a world champ fighter himself. He also loves music. And what I was so impressed, he was talking to me the other day or a while ago. And, you know, he joined a new band, so he's going to have to learn new music. He's been a professional musician, you know, as well as a fighter. And now he does hypnosis and NLP. But, you know, by joining a new band, he had to learn new music. That's impressive to me because then your passion grows. And guess what? When that passion comes back in one area, it will drift back into your hypnosis and NLP. You know, when I got super excited about the pressure point karate, it made my NLP and hypnosis even more effective. No, I wasn't pressure point knocking out clients at the time. Trust me, there were many I wanted to, or students. But, you know, it was just that passion. You know, when I started studying film acting as opposed to just stage acting, my God, and then it kind of, what it has to do is the neurochemicals are released in your brain and they spill over into other areas because it's not just localized into, I'm just passionate about this. It seems to make you more passionate in other areas. That's why we always talk about passionate people. Sometimes they're too passionate about too many things, right? So that's my thing. I would say if you're looking for a good trainer, find out what else are they passionate about? How does it impact their, whether you're taking NLP training or hypnosis training? Does it impact it? If so, how? You know, what are they learning? You know, what are you into right now? I got to start my the podcast up, the spotlight's on. And one of the questions I'll do Bruce soon, Bruce from Chicago. I always ask, what's your current passion in our field? And what's your other passions? What are you into besides that? Whether it's, you know, horseback riding or whatever it is, right? Because again, we have a skill set that makes everything we do even more effective, right? So those were the two questions I got this week. So, you know, take those with a grain of salt. That's just my opinion. But again, you know, NLP is not a tool. It's a toolbox. And how do you find a good trainer? A, that they still do it with real life people, not just as a trainer, right? And again, sounding kind of ironic because I'm about to do like several trainings right in a row, right? I'm going to Las Vegas and then Oregon and then, I got one online that I'm doing at home and then Beirut, Lebanon and then New York City and then Atlanta. So I got a lot of training set up in the next few months. So I'm doing that again, but I still coach people online. I talk to people. I'm very active in my own getting better, my own recovery program. So I'm always helping people. So I'm always willing to test the work. So, hey, Ann. So anyway, that's the two questions I had. I didn't get any more questions. Again, if you have questions, if you put them on the Facebook Live or if you're on my email list, just email me. It might take a little while to filter through, but next week I'm teaching. So I'll probably do the NFNLP forum on Friday next week I'm doing it. Next week I'm gone. What is next week? No, I'm here next week. I'm getting all confused. But I'll be gone for 1 week. I won't be here the 25th. I'm going to be teaching in beautiful Las Vegas. So anyway, I just lost my train of thought trying to figure out what I'm doing. See, you still can't. Multitasking is, it can be difficult. So have some fun with it. Want to talk a little bit about marketing. Somebody did ask a question about marketing, something I mentioned the other day, that the current thing in marketing for Facebook Live, YouTube videos, is a natural approach, right? Not being too staged. I think we're going to see it flip back soon, by the way, because for a while people were, you know, you had the green screen, you wanted to make it all pretty, you had your makeup, if you were doing, it was almost like shooting a film, right? And then it went away from that into natural, you know, where it was like my friend, a dear friend, Dan Candell, does it walking to the coffee shop. You know, I'm always doing it out with the horses. And you could, as Monica said, you could tell you're actually out there with the horse covered in sweat. You know, I'm like, you know, because just been cleaning the stall and brushing the horses. It makes you kind of, especially here in Florida. So it's a naturalistic look, right? Maybe having shaved, you know, little stuff like that. I think we're going to go back to being a little bit more formal, where people are a little bit more pre-staged, right? But we'll see. And again, it depends the kind of clients you want to draw. And again, so the person asked about the marketing, what is this about natural, right? Well, if you take a very naturalistic approach, so you're not always, you know, your hair is not perfect, your makeup is not perfect, you're not in a perfect studio setting, you know, you're going to draw more if you're more natural and you're not, and it's not edited like this, it's live. That's why it's called Facebook Live. So unless you're very good at reading a script, and next week I'll talk about, there's a really cool program you can put up that you can run, and it'll actually run a script while you're talking to the camera, so you can actually read your script while, and it looks like this, like you're looking right at your camera. But that's a skill set you have to do, so it doesn't sound like you're reading a script. But anyway, if you do it this very natural way, you're going to get clients that are attracted to you being natural and human, right? You will not draw the people that want everything letter perfect, right? So, you know, they, like that, there was a glitch. Why didn't you edit that out? You could have edited that out. Do another take. You know, that is one of the things Facebook Live has changed. That's why sometimes you'll see someone will do a Facebook Live, and then when they post it up on YouTube, it's been edited. But it's just, you know, what kind of clients you want to draw, right? And what's your target demographic, right? If you're going for super high-end clients, you know, CEO types, you might want to do it a little bit more slick, a little bit more professional, a little bit more that. But even then, there's still, we always forget that even the people sitting at Tim Cook, his name Tim Cook, the head of Apple, he's still a human being. He's still got, who knows what he's actually, what is he like personally? We don't know. Or I don't, you know, if you do, let me know. I'll try to get in touch with him. But, you know, it's like, you know, maybe he likes a natural approach. Maybe he likes more formal, whatever it is, right? And again, we can default, and I'll start winding it up. We can default to the most successful person in the self-development world currently, and probably in history lately, is Tony Robbins. He does a lot of his videos off the cuff, and he just goes, right? And I've heard him talk that he does that because he likes the free flow. And that's one of the things he's trying to teach people. Don't be too scripted. Don't be too... right? So, you know, it's not like you're shooting a Fortune 500 movie where you got your lines and, you know, they want your letter perfect lines. So, and if he's the most successful, well, something he's doing is still working, right? And they just take a lot of clips from his trainings and put them up there. And, you know, he'll have a verbal gaffe, if you will, whatever, like we all have, I do. Other people may have. So it makes you more human. It makes you approachable. Again, what kind of clients are you going after? What's your target demographic? This, this, and this. And the last thing I want to talk about in marketing is if you're going to place yourself as an expert in a field, do me one favor. Please be an expert in that field. You know, why would, you know, someone's going to, if you're going to do prosperity coaching and you're not very prosperous, I don't think that's very good for anybody, right? If you're a personal trainer, you ought to be in good physical shape. Not saying you got to be in great physical shape. There's one person by us, he's a personal trainer, and well, it's a lady. She's a personal trainer. She's probably one of the busiest I know, and she's not in like bodybuilding shape. But when she shows you her picture of 4 years ago when she was 80 pounds heavier and she's only like this tall, 80 pounds heavier than she is now, that's a living example. You know, my dear friend Scott McFall talks about, you know, if you're going to place yourself as an expert, be an expert at it, right? Because the people you're going to draw to you are probably very knowledgeable in the thing that they want to improve, right? And so if you're going to claim you're an expert, it won't take them long to figure out you're not, right? And then you actually hurt the whole field, right? And we're seeing that somewhat be the blowback into some personal coaching, right? That, you know, that people are going after the wrong markets, right? When I say you got to be an example of what you do, you don't have to be the multimillionaire, but you got to at least have a good story to tell. You know, Miss Victoria Gallagher, I would call her, she's going to be a really good friend. I really like Victoria Gallagher. She teaches law of attraction. She's got a really good story, and it's true. And so she's an example of what she teaches. You know, so that's a good thing to think about. So, you know, and if you want to get into a field, if you're fascinated by it, doesn't mean you can't become an expert, but learn about it, know about it. You know, and the best way to be an expert is what is it you're good at and build on that. You know, take your current passions. Again, when I link this back to close the loop, if Monica's still on the call and my NLP people, right, Bruce, to close the loop, if you have these other passions, that's one of the markets you can go after, right? I know one lady, Laura King, has a whole thriving business of helping horse people, right? She grew up with horses. She loves horses. That's her whole thing. She works with people with horses, right? She's 20, 30 people a week just with horses, right? To ride better, to jump, whatever it is, right? Dressage, all that stuff, right? That was her passion. She turned it into what she's doing. I'm blessed. Looks like I'm going to New York City to do a hypnosis for actors soon. That's going to be fun. Then I want to maybe do that in Atlanta. You know, it's like, you know, I can claim an expertise in that field without saying, no, I haven't been the major star of a huge movie. If I did, I don't know if I'd be doing a hypnosis for acting seminar, but I can say, look, I've done over 100 plays. I've done, you know, several small films. I've done this, so I have some background, right, that I can draw from. But my expertise is the hypnosis and the NLP and how to apply it. Some of the best sports psychologists don't play the sport that they're good to coaching at, right, because they're working with the mind aspect, not the other stuff. So it's just something to consider. So that's all I wanted to talk about this week. So answered a couple questions, did a couple things on marketing. Next week, let's make it a marketing day. Next, the 18th will be a marketing, September 18th will be a marketing NLP forum. So if you have any marketing questions, send them to me, because God knows I probably don't have the answer. But in our NLP hypnosis world, there's a lot of people with a lot of answers. Maybe I could reach out to them. So people give me some homework, send me some questions. And, you know, like what's, you know, one of the things I'm reaching out to people is what's working in Facebook ads versus what's not working. Because I just had that, and I will shut up after this. I just had that experience of, you know, one of the things I was doing on Facebook, suddenly they said, can't do that anymore. Okay, got to retool, because, you know, they're going to do what they want to do. So anyway, just something to think about. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us. And next week, that's the 18th, we'll be doing, that'll be also a Facebook Live as well as Zoom. And it'll be mostly on marketing. So I'll see you.